go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Tyler Crash Klang. And I've got to ask, I usually start with a question for you, Scott.
Okay, what's the question?
Do you remember our earlier episode we did pretty recently about why cars look boring?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure we did. Yeah.
I've been thinking about that for a while because there was so much to the world of auto design that I didn't really consider until we started delving into that episode.
Oh, that's both of us, buddy. We didn't realize that, real estate was at such a premium in an automobile, right? I mean,
right.
Every little inch is pondered over for a long, long time. I mean, it really gets down to, a game of millimeters inside the car, what can fit, what can't fit. Outside is really no different. They're continually stripping away things on the outside of a car. I mean, that may be part of it. You know, one thing when we were digging into today's topic, and we'll jump into this in just a moment, but I was thinking, we get a lot of email from people that say, why are they boring looking? Why do all cars kind of look the same now? Why do they have that same shape? Why do they all look, so kind of plain, right?
I mean,
new cars kind of plain. I mean, there's a few standouts among them. Every year there's something that stands out. But for the most part, they do have the same general shape. And there's some very good reasons for that. And some of that comes down to, believe it or not, pedestrian safety, the exterior design of the car, the interior design of the car, the dimensions of the car, everything. A lot of this comes down to pedestrian safety. It's really surprising.
Right. And this could be considered a sequel. If you have checked out our previous episode, which I think we just released, about the history of jaywalking.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it deals with pedestrians in the road when they're not supposed to be in the road.
And a very, very strange marketing war. It's an interesting, fascinating piece of history. And you're absolutely right, Scott. It continues today when automotive designers do their first sketches. I don't know if you've probably seen quite a few of these. I love looking at the initial sketches.
Oh, yeah.
And then what actually rolls off the line.
Oh, well, you know what? The sketches are beautiful, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just gorgeous sketches. And even the concept cars that they build for the shows are beautiful in a lot of cases, right? I mean, they come out and they show you this sleek, just incredible looking machine that you're practically drooling to get behind the wheel. You're ready for it, right? You want to buy this car. But then when it arrives in the showroom, a year and a half later, a year later, it's not the same car that you saw on the show floor. What happened? There's something that happens in between.
Right. Yeah. And what we have found is that there is more to this story than you might imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this is kind of crazy, but I had a hard time believing this number. This is a really high number. All right. So one factor that helps to determine the shape of cars, which a lot of – I guess it's fair to say that Americans are less aware of this than a lot of the rest of the world. And
right.
We'll describe why that is, but it's true. That's not everybody, of course. But each year, over 270,000 cars slam into pedestrians and kill them every single year somewhere in the United – or not in the United States, in the world. 270,000? Doesn't that sound like – that's an incredible number. That's 740 per day if you break that down to 365 days. So that's 740 somewhere in the world every day all year long.
And so to combat this, in the first decade of the 2000s, governments in Asia and Europe began passing laws requiring auto manufacturers to design cars with the explicit purpose of increasing the survival rate for a pedestrian.
Yeah, for a struck pedestrian, they wanted them to have a better chance, I guess, and to investigate why it is that, so many of these pedestrians are dying even at low speeds. Because if you think about this, and we'll talk about this several times as we go through here, but cars and pedestrians are often in the same they share the same space in big cities. In small cities, big cities, it goes back to what we were talking about, Ben, crossing at the crosswalks in our previous episode. But a lot of these collisions that are happening between pedestrians and cars are relatively slow accidents. They're not necessarily, traveling at 50 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour. We're talking about people getting hit, between 10 and 40 miles per hour, maybe at the most. 40 would be a top speed accident in a big city.
And you can see some chilling simulations entirely based on the math and the physics of the event.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how common it is, but I've been hit by a car before.
Really?
Yeah, and it was at a low speed, thank goodness.
So, I guess so. Yeah, you're still around to talk about it.
Well, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was walking through a parking lot.
Oh.
And somebody zipped around a corner in the parking lot and popped me.
Where'd you get hit? In the back of the legs or the side?
I got hit on my right side.
Oh, okay.
And
oh, gosh, Ben, I had no idea this happened.
Put me in a spin, and then I'm like face up looking at the sky, you know?
Yeah, you're on the ground, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it knocked me on the ground, uh-huh. And the person drove away.
No,
yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Broken bones?
No. It was pretty low impact.
Yeah, I guess so. But they left.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they zipped.
Oh, my gosh.
I wasn't the first person they hit in that parking lot.
Well, we're going to talk about this more later, that's for sure, because I was looking at these simulations, you know, the ones that you're talking about. They can do these with, you know, different weight models, and I don't know why they chose this car, this video that we've been looking at, I guess.
Right.
This car, it looks like a Saturn. I think they're using a Saturn.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that was chosen as the vehicle, but it has a relatively low hood line. But they showed different accident scenarios between 10 miles per hour and 40 miles per hour. And I'll tell you that, you know, 10 miles per hour, it still looks pretty severe. I mean, you get struck. Here's what happens to the pedestrian. And it shows this pretty graphically, I guess.
They get struck and they.
Yeah, the head hits the hood of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And, the person kind of just flops down right in front of the car, in front of the bumper, ends up in a sitting position.
Right.
In front of the car, but they're not really thrown any distance by this accident, you know, 10 miles per hour.
But that changes dramatically.
As you go up to 20 miles per hour, the pedestrian gets struck.
And they go up to the windshield.
Yeah, the head hits the hood and the windshield. And then they do kind of like this half flip in the air and then land upside down on their head on the concrete, you know, several feet away at this point. And then when you go up to 30 miles an hour, and there's only two more here, but 30 miles an hour, again, same thing happens, you know, the head strikes the windshield. The person does a full flip in the air. It's almost like a cartwheel that happens. And then they land on their back, and they've flown a long way at this point. I mean, a long way away from the car. It looks like several meters, I guess, is how they've got it measured out here on the graph that they've got. At 40 miles an hour. I don't know. Looking at this simulation,
yeah.
I don't know how a pedestrian gets struck at 40 miles per hour and survives. And it's that horrific. It's that violent of an action. So they're struck. They do 2.5 flips in the air above the windshield of the car as the car is traveling, trying to slow down and stop. And then at this point, they've flown a long, long way. And the impact on the ground is extremely severe, as you can imagine. Not only is the car skidding to a stop, but the body is sliding to a stop as well. It's a very violent violent action that happens at 40 miles an hour. And, you know, when you're in your car, 40 miles an hour doesn't really feel like you're going that fast. I mean, it feels like a slow speed, doesn't it?
Right. But the impact on someone who is not encased in a shell of fiberglass and metal
is much
different.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, humans are soft, right? Cars are pretty hard, if you want to put it that way. But the thing is that there are two phases of a pedestrian car accident, and there's a couple things we'll tell you about the different phases. The first phase is the impact itself. The pedestrian hits the car.
Yeah. The Saturn pops you on the pops you on
the legs,
side,
the shins, or
leg,
or your side, as you say, yeah. And then you hit the hood of the car or the windshield of the car, and then the second phase is when you impact the ground. You know, it's the impact that the pedestrian makes several feet later. You know, whether they're thrown from the vehicle, because after about 20 miles per hour, the pedestrian, the human, is thrown a long distance, and you go up to 40 miles an hour, it's a really long distance.
Right. And my thing was probably more like under 10 miles.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's really severe. So you think that's under 10?
I think so, because I was just bruised up, but I didn't break anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, this is all new to me. I'm just surprised. I don't know why.
I live a colorful life.
It seems like something that would have come up before, 10 years. You know, we've been talking for 10 years. I didn't know this.
There's a Jeep Cherokee. I was working at a bookstore in Atlanta, Georgia during college.
Okay. All right. So long before you worked here at How Stuff Works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Anyhow.
Right. Again, more later on this. But all right, but here's the interesting part, Ben. You would think that, you know, getting thrown such a long distance and landing in a heap, you know, somewhere down the road would be the worst part of this whole thing, right?
Right.
That's not necessarily the case, because in 80% of these situations, 80%, the deaths came from the very first phase of that impact, the contact with the car.
Right. And let's parse that into that initial impact into initial impact A and initial impact B. Mm-hmm. Initial impact A is going to be when the bumper hits the legs. Mm-hmm. That's not what makes it fatal.
No, I mean, you can live with a broken leg.
Mm-hmm. But what did 80% of the people in was when they slammed their head into the hood of the car.
Yeah, or so, the windshield, right?
Right. So you get that mechanical shin kick and your feet are knocked from under you, and then boom, one of the most sensitive parts of your body has a – I almost said head-on collision.
Oh, yeah.
But it does collide with the hood. And so this is what automakers started to focus on.
Yeah, and you know, might wonder – why legislation? Why is that even necessary, right, at this mm-hmm. point? Why can't it just kind of be something that the automakers naturally do? But we'll talk about that after the first word from our sponsor. So we were going to talk about legislation at this point, right, Ben?
Right.
All right. So why do you think – I think I might have an answer for this. Why do you think that legislation for something like this might be necessary?
Ah, I think I have an answer.
Okay.
At least a guess, a pretty basic guess.
All right.
Wouldn't it be because auto design is already so internally competitive mm-hmm. for real estate in an organization mm-hmm. That this sort of consideration would have to be a forced priority by an outside entity?
Ah, okay. That's kind of along the lines of what I'm talking about. I think I have a different – slant on this, a different angle on this whole thing. So my thought is that and it's not my own thought. I've read this somewhere and I don't remember where it came from, but it seemed to strike a chord with me. And this is from some different source, you know, somewhere else. My thought is that if – and I'll try to put this in a succinct way here, but it's hard enough to get people to pay extra for a safety device in the car that saves their own life or the life of a passenger. Like, let's say that you can buy a package with extra airbags.
Yeah.
You think you know people would do that because that might prevent, you know, a death in the near future of them or one of their family members, right? Mm-hmm. But it's extra money. If we start adapting cars in the way we're talking about, you know, to create pedestrian safety devices on cars, you know, on the outside of cars for people that we don't even know really. You don't know that pedestrian that you're going to strike. You don't know who you're going to hit.
Right.
Are people that are buying the car going to pay extra for pedestrian safety features for someone they don't even know when they won't even buy extra airbags for themselves in the car sometimes? Or not just airbags, but, you know, seat anchors or whatever, you know, whatever the safety device might be. It's just a thought. And I read that somewhere else. It's not my own original thought, but I thought that may be the answer there. That's why external safety devices, not necessarily the internal stuff, but the external stuff might have to be legislated into action. Otherwise, it's probably never going to happen because people just aren't going to pay the extra for someone they don't know mm-hmm. to survive a potential crash years from now that, you know, they don't even know if they're going to be in or not.
Yeah, it's kind of like the idea of opting out versus opting in with organ donation.
Yeah.
Do you remember when they changed that?
Mm-hmm.
You used to have to opt in mm-hmm. and then they several places changed it, at least here in the States, so that people had to opt out.
Yeah, because it's easier to do it that way. They get more donors that way.
And you get a discount.
Yeah, that's right. But, I know that's a very cynical way to look at it, but I mean
– I think it's wrong.
I think that this – in this case, and I'm not really one for lots of legislation obviously. I like the market to determine what happens, but I think that in this case, I do think that legislation if this has to go, if it has to pass, I think the only way it's going to pass is through, you know, this happening, you know, from an outside force making this happen.
So let's look at the nuts and bolts of this as well. What actually happens? So if you've seen a lot of the recent – God, the past few decades of cars, you know, the sheet metal that's on most car hoods – is going to be kind of soft. You know, you can push in. It's got give. Yeah. So you can dent it.
Pretty flimsy.
Pretty flimsy. So yeah. You would think, well, Scott, Ben, why does – how do people die from that impact? Because, you know, 20 miles an hour sounds like it could break a leg, but it doesn't sound like it could lead to a fatal head injury. The problem is not that soft-ish sheet metal over the hood. The problem's what lurks under the hood, sort of like that shark in Jaws.
Yeah, there's a big engine under there.
And that is not soft.
No, that's not moving anywhere. And in fact, it's not just the engine. There's also, you know, a motor for the windshield wipers. There's all kinds of stuff that's underneath there that, is hard. I mean, the battery's underneath there too. And unless automakers design a cushion area, you know, like a gap, I guess, an area that it can deform, without striking that, you know, someplace to slow down that motion, a crumple zone, I guess. That's really what it is. It's a very narrow crumple zone, for a pedestrian head to hit the hood. If they don't design that, you know, and there's just the engine right immediately underneath there, there's going to be trouble.
Right. So that's why we see automakers making specific design decisions. And there's a cool article on Car and Driver about this too, wherein they mentioned the trend toward building higher hoods and taller noses, because just that little bit of air over the engine changes everything regarding the shape of the car.
Yeah, and we can walk this through from the front bumper to the back end if you like.
I mean, oh, totally.
Because that one change, I mean, we just said what it was, right? And we're just trying to add, I think in this case they said that there's a minimum of about 20 millimeters of clearance that's required between the underside of the hood and the highest part of the engine.
So about 0.8 inches.
Yeah, right. So we're talking very, very slight, you know, increase in size here. It's not really that much, but what that does to the design of the car is amazing. I mean, it starts right at the very front bumper. I mean, of course, you're going to have a more upright front end, I guess, on it, you know, to begin with. It's going to have to be higher up. It's not going to be, you know, the super low sleek lines of, I'm going to have a bad example here. Like, think about like an IROC Camaro or something like that. Think about how low and kind of flat and lean that front end was. It was pointed. It was very low down, right? It's not that way anymore. If you look at sedans and cars and even sports cars to some degree, they have more of an upright front end than they did in the past.
Yes.
And it doesn't, you know, it's not just the front of the hood that has to come up a little bit. You know, it's the entire hood. And you know, if you want to keep the design of the car true to the way that the way that the designers sketched it originally, you also have to raise the back in order to keep that look exactly the same. Otherwise, the angles all change and everything looks goofy.
Right. So the entire cowl has to be raised by a similar amount or maybe a little more if the designers want a wedge shape look.
Yeah. And when the cowl comes up, what else comes up?
Yeah, this moves the windshield base, makes the dash higher.
Yeah, the dash has to come up too. And because the dash is higher, that means that the front seats have to be raised accordingly.
You know, just while we're going on this, I want to tell you, you remember that children's book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie?
No, I don't think I do.
Oh, well, it's about how if you do one thing for this mouse in the book, then you have to do these other things as well.
Okay.
So we're seeing this domino effect. If you move the dash higher, mm-hmm. what do you have to move after that?
If you do – okay, so you have to move the – you have to raise the seats, right?
Yeah.
So the seats come up. And then once you raise the seats up, that means that the roof of the car has to be moved up as well. So you can see that this is just growing exponentially, right? I mean, it started with that one little 8/10 of an inch at the front end of the car, and now suddenly you're raising the seats in the hood of the – I mean the roof of the car.
Right. And now that the roof is higher, the base of the side windows has to be lifted to keep the car from looking, you know, stupid.
Yeah, that's right. So the belt line, right?
Yeah.
The belt line has to come up. And, you know, the higher belt line means that above the rear wheel arches, it means there's going to be more sheet metal back there. So that means that what that does is that throws off the proportion of the wheel to body ratio that the original sketch had. And I know it sounds minor, but what it would mean was that your tires would look little tiny on the vehicle compared to the way that the initial sketch looked, right?
It
probably had really cool looking proportions and everything looked mm-hmm. just right. So from this, you know, 8/10 of an inch at the front, you know, just over the hood, the 20 millimeters, you know, that we raised the hood, all of that stuff, even some interior components have to be changed around all the way back to the rear wheel arches. And to fill those rear wheel arches, which now look like they've got tiny little tires in them.
Sure.
They've had to add larger tires. That's why we've shifted in a lot of cases. It's not every reason, but let's say that like on the BMWs, they've gone from, you know, having 18-inch wheels, they've gone up to 19 or even 20-inch wheels now because it seems to fit the wheel opening a lot better than it did, you know, prior to when these regulations were in place. So again, this is all starting from just having to have a little bit of clearance between the hood of the car and the engine of the car,
mm-hmm.
just for pedestrian safety. So pedestrian safety, in a way, is making you have – making you. It's creating a need for larger wheels on cars. Believe that or not. I mean, it's that ripple effect, right? It ripples all the way to the back end of the car.
And this is not a conspiracy theory. I mean, picture Scott and I in front of one of those cold case walls where we have all these newspaper clippings and red string.
I like those.
Yeah, I love those things.
Yeah. We have one here in the office, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have one for stuff they don't want you to know. Yeah. And I used to have one at my house, but
– a real one.
Different shows.
Was I on that wall?
Of course. I'm on to you, man.
Right. But isn't it strange? I mean,
this
effect goes right from the very front bumper all the way to the back. And again, it's all over just a tiny little thing, a 20 millimeter change in the front end. But it all comes down to, and I know you could adjust this so that, you know, well, just make the hood higher and raise the seats a little bit, and that's good enough. You don't have to do all that other stuff. But if you want to keep the attractive proportions that the designer initially intended for that automobile,
yeah,
then that's what you have to do. You have to make all those changes. So it's, you know, auto design is terribly complex. We've learned that over the years, but especially in the last year or so, we've been talking about some things that just blow your mind as
real
far as
eye openers.
Like, yeah, it really is. Like exactly what goes into it. It's very difficult.
And this is just one example, but we'd like to show you another example after a word from our sponsor. So in addition to this issue of having even just a little bit extra air between the intake manifold and the hood, we have another issue, which is that a lot of cars have shorter hoods mm-hmm. nowadays, right?
Yeah, sure.
And some of that comes from the idea of decreasing a car's footprint so it's easier to drive and park in densely populated areas.
Sure. City cars.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Like think of the Honda Fit. That's got a tiny little hood
right.
on it, right? And the distance between the front bumper and the start of the windshield, the base of the windshield,
right.
very short distance.
Incredibly so.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I drive Monte Carlos. So,
well, yeah, right. You got a long, big hood on that. So
yeah, you could
so
take a road trip on that hood.
Yeah. Yes, you could. Yeah.
But with a shorter hood, we see a different kind of problem when there's a taller pedestrian.
Yeah. Think about this. What if someone, you know, a 6.5-footer, you know, is walking in front of a Honda Fit mm-hmm. and they're struck in the legs or the shin, I guess, by that vehicle. Where do you think that their head is going to end up? It's not on the hood of that tiny little car.
Right.
Their head's going to end up in the middle of the windshield or possibly on the A-pillar.
Which could be a fatality.
That is really bad when that happens. And that's not all that infrequent because, I mean, think about where the A-pillars are positioned. They're at the edge of the car. It's not all that often. I mean, you know what? I can't even say for sure, but doesn't it seem that when a pedestrian's hit, a lot of times it's the edge of the car that gets them. It's like they either just got hit or they just missed being
right.
You know, just missed by just a fraction. But it seems like they're at one corner or the other of the car. Typically, it seems.
Yeah,
a lot
I think
of times
so.
It's usually not right dead center.
No, it feels like it's usually going to be kind of a side swipe.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, the driver's going to try to swing the wheel and, you know, avert that accident. And, you know, likely a lot of times you end up clipping the pedestrian inadvertently. But anyways, we're getting off the track here. But that could be a fatality, as you said. I mean, that's a serious situation. But you can't make one car safer for everybody. I mean, it could be dangerous to children. It could be dangerous to, you know, the average percentile person that's
sure.
out there walking around. It could be safer for taller people. You know, you just have to determine, kind of what the median is, I guess. And that's probably how they do it. They just decide that, you know, here's our average that we're going to shoot for that.
You're absolutely right. There is a balance and a calculation, and you can't knowingly sacrifice the driver or passengers of a car for hypothetical pedestrians.
No, see, that's the thing. You can't make the A-pillars any softer because those are there for rollover. You can't make the windshield any softer because they're there for, you know, well, I guess anything that might come up from the roadway during, you know, well, and wind blockage, you know, that kind of thing. But I mean, they're supposed to protect the occupants of the car if a rock were to fly up or, you know, anything like that, some debris on the road. So I guess there is an option. There's a solution. But it's something, again, that, that people would have to pay extra for. And there is one company that's doing it. They've already done this. Hmm. It's Volvo, of course. Yeah. There are other companies that are kind of in the water, I guess, with them on this.
But Volvo's renowned as, of course, the vanguard of safety.
Yeah, and they've jumped in, you know, feet first. They're really going all in on this. And this has been for a while. They've done this on one of their cars. I want to say that it's the the V40, I think, is the one. And they've created something called a pedestrian airbag. And I know other companies have kind of toyed around with this idea, but this one's in production, and it has been for a while. Now the V40 airbag, and it's essentially a car really that's, I guess, made for city driving. Really, I mean, if you want to think of it that way, because you know, city traffic, because that's where cars and people share the same space. It makes perfect sense that it would be on this vehicle. The way that it happens is that there's a bunch of sensors on the front bumper, and when they strike something that they determine to be a human-like leg, which I know it's funny to say it that way, but that's how they had to test it, right? They had to hit something that had a certain give to it, a certain flexibility to it, and it determined, these sensors actually determine that they've hit a human leg versus like a parking pole or, you know, whatever you want to call it. Like
right.
Cement poles.
And that's really important because we have to keep in mind this is an airbag, so you can't just like roll it up and tuck it back down.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you know, determine that because if you bump something in a parking lot, you don't want this airbag to deploy.
Right.
Because that can be extremely costly because there's another action that happens with it. When, you know, that front bumper sensor senses this leg contact, it raises the back. There's an explosive charge that raises the back end of the hood, or I guess the trailing edge of the hood,
right by up, the cowl.
Yeah, up a certain amount. I don't know if it's a couple inches or whatever it is, but it allows the airbag then a U-shaped bag to unfurl that protects the pedestrian that was struck from contacting the windshield and the A-pillar,
right
on both sides. So it's a great big U-shape inflatable bag. And you can imagine that if that thing went off unexpectedly, you know, when you bump a tree, you're parking somewhere at like some festival or something, you bump a tree and it goes off, that would be a drag.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hit a pedestrian, you for sure want that thing to go off because it'll protect them and hopefully protect you against some future lawsuit maybe.
And it's a pretty smart design. Other automakers are taking a cue from Volvo as per normal.
Yeah.
And places like Jaguar, Lexus, and so on have similar systems, and they're all using charges to raise a hood in a crash.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point, Volvo's the only one with an airbag.
Yeah, I think they are too. And they've been doing that for a while, again, on that V40. And they might even have it on another vehicle. I'm not exactly sure right now. But you know what the best solution to this would be overall?
What's that?
Is if there never were any pedestrian accidents to begin with.
Yeah,
and,
agreed.
And that's kind of the hope is with, you know, some of these autonomous vehicles is that that may be taken out of the picture altogether. Now, I don't have a whole lot of confidence that it will completely be removed. I mean, I don't think you can ever say that.
I don't think so, just because even in a smart city or whatever, several years from now, a place where all vehicles are autonomous and all traffic lines are clearly delineated, things will still go wrong. There's no way to prepare for an unknown.
No, but even the man systems, you know, the ones that like newer cars that have full stop systems, you know, with pedestrian sensing technology,
right?
Those are great. I mean, I'm sure that those are saving lives. I'm positive of it. And you know, they watch out for cyclists. They watch out for other things as well. It's not just it's you know, dogs and cats and whatever is in the way. I'm sure those things are saving lives at this point.
Okay.
It has to be.
I agree, but hear me out on this. Not to be too pessimistic, I believe there are still problems with that. You're right, of course, Scott, that everybody realizes it would be better if pedestrians were just never hit in the first place. Volvo gets that as well. They've got this thing called city safety technology, right?
Yeah.
And it's doing exactly what you're describing. It uses sensors to detect pedestrians, cyclists, what have you, a guy with a hot dog cart, et cetera.
Yeah, you never know.
And automatically slams the brakes if these pedestrians or cyclists are stepping or swerving in front of you. That's great. That is great. And hopefully it does save lives.
Yeah.
but hopefully it doesn't do it at the expense of the lives of the people in the car with that technology, because if your car slams on the brakes and someone else is right behind you and they're doing, you know, 60 or 50 or something, this would have to be like somebody on the interstate.
Okay.
Like a pedestrian on the interstate running out.
All right.
Which is really dangerous and happens more often than you might think.
Yeah. Deer collision?
A deer collision. Mm-hmm. That's another great example.
Sure, yeah.
So then what happens is, sure, the Volvo is full stop, but now it's being slammed at like 50 miles an hour from the rear.
Well,
right?
The answer is everybody has to drive a Volvo with full stop. That's the answer.
That's, you know, you're joking, but that's usually the answer autonomous car buffs give.
Well, you know what they do? They say that if everybody's driving this, there's going to be no problem at all, right? That's always the situation. If you mix it up, though, if you've got, you know, autonomous vehicles and the human element involved as well, there's going to be some problems. There's going to be some inherent issues with that. Now, one thing that we haven't mentioned here along the way, and you know what? I'm going to tell you right now, I'm probably not going to get to one thing that I wanted to mention here, and I bet people are wanting to hear about this, I would guess. Mm. We're talking about the external design of cars and how, you know, they've kind of been smoothed out for safety, right? You know, softened up and shaped in different ways for pedestrian safety. We haven't talked yet about, you know, the complete loss of hood ornaments on cars.
Why? Oh, that's right.
I mean, they're almost completely gone, and the ones that still are out there.
Sometimes even retract.
Yeah, they have technology. Some have technology in them that prevent damage to pedestrians when they're struck, and others have just real simple mechanical things built into them. There are still hood ornaments out there, but there are very few cars that have it, and they tend to be high-end luxury vehicles,
like a Rolls or something.
Yeah, or the Mack truck has that as well. You know, the great big you know, blue collar dump trucks and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, the semis, but. I wish we could get to that. I've got a bunch of hood ornament stuff, and you know, like when they kind of went away and what happened to them and how they kind of slipped from the top of the hood standing up to down on the hood laying down and then down onto the grill. So like they've kind of like made this slump down the vehicle. It's a whole part of brand recognition that we're not going to really get to. But all right, one thing that we need to cover here before we wrap this whole thing up is about a group that we haven't really talked about here, and that is the American auto manufacturers. We've been primarily talking about European manufacturers, Asian manufacturers, and they have been pushed. You know, they've been made to come about with this. You know, they've been made to. I guess it's probably not the best way to say it. They've been made to care about this, right?
Right. They've been incentivized.
Yeah, they've been incentivized to care about pedestrian safety. Of course, they want to care about pedestrian safety, of course, but they've been. Pushed into that by agencies, by national agencies, and mm-hmm. we here in the United States have not. We've kind of followed suit with some of the stuff. You know, we've, as we mentioned, you know, lost the hood ornaments and that kind of stuff, and made hoods a little bit softer and, you know, flexible, that kind of thing. But really, I mean, we haven't been pushed to the same pedestrian safety design features or standards that the European, you know, Japan markets, you know, again, all of the Asian markets
sure.
have been pushed into. And America's, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, believe it or not, has been a little bit evasive about what they feel about this, about why they haven't really pressed for pedestrian safety standards in modern cars.
Absolutely. And the closest thing we have to an official line regarding that is that the mix of cars on U.S. interstates or roadways isn't as easily fixed with a one-size-fits-all sort of solution or mandate. And to me, Scott, this argument does have some sand to it.
Yeah, I guess so. We have more trucks. We have more SUVs. We have more, I guess, larger vehicles, you know, sharing space alongside smaller vehicles, where in Europe it seems to be that, you know, those tend to be more of the commercial vehicles.
Right. So one of the arguments is that let's say we had these sorts of safety requirements on a pickup that sits higher than the average sedan. Mm-hmm. So let's just say F-150.
Okay.
Most popular by a long shot.
Oh, yeah.
So their argument at the NHTSA is that you could make some mandates that would make the F-150 less lethal to a child in the street, but that might make it more dangerous for an adult in the street.
Okay.
So maybe the solution then is just specificity on the category of vehicle? I don't know.
Well, you know, we talked about this with the Honda Fit earlier, right?
I mean,
it's probably less deadly for a child to be struck by a Honda Fit at a slow speed than it is for a, you know, a 6.5 foot tall person or 7 foot tall person to be struck by a Honda Fit at a slow speed. I mean, they're gonna contact different parts of that car through phase one of the crash, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to that phase one, phase two. Phase one, again, being the most fatal part of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do automakers play that balance? How do they make sure that it's safe for everybody and not make it extremely deadly for some other group?
And can such a solution be possible? It's a question that no automaker and no incredibly smart, handsome, and somewhat funny auto podcasters have been able to answer.
You know, they play around with these numbers all the time, even with, you know, like when should they turn on the passenger airbags? You know, like
right.
At what weight and, you know, what – I mean, they're getting pretty good at that. But they have, you know, these standards that they have to adhere to. Like it's, you know, I don't know what the – 10th percentile male and female, and they take the average weight and, you know, whatever the number is, it's something like that. They have to determine on average who is going to be in that car, and that's got to be incredibly hard for them to do.
Yeah, that's pretty difficult stuff to say the least.
It's not one size fits all for anybody on anything in any car, really, unless you have a custom made.
Yeah, and we want to hear what – you know, I was thinking of what a good question would be to ask everybody in this episode. And it's tangentially related. Let me see what you think about this, Scott.
Okay.
We'd like to hear from you folks, friends and neighbors, fellow car fans. What do you think is the most, I guess, controversial change or trend that you've seen in auto design recently? Recently being the past, let's say, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you think is the coolest thing? What do you think is the worst thing? What do you think is like the strangest? Why is everyone doing it?
Yeah,
type
or
of thing?
Do you know the reason behind a change? I mean, that might be interesting too. I mean, a lot of this stuff is pedestrian safety, as we talked about. That changed a huge amount of exterior ornamentation on cars. I mean, it used to be that cars were they had a lot of stuff sticking off of them. You know, like protrusions. You know, with chrome bumpers and you know, ornamental things.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all gone now. Cars are really slick, and it's not all about aerodynamics. It's also about pedestrian safety. So that's one example. But what else can you come up with? I mean, that's a great question, Ben. Like what else? What's controversial, I guess?
We'd love to hear it. Also, I learned a new word while we were researching this, Scott.
What's that?
Are you ready? Pedestrians.
Pedestrians?
Yeah, pedestrian with the word text inserted.
Okay.
These are the people who are texting while they're walking.
Not looking.
Across, you know, four lanes of traffic.
Oh, yeah. They just they're going on the fact that they know that light is still green for them, so they're able to walk across that crosswalk, right? I mean, they're not even putting their head up for a second.
So pedestrian, apparently, going back on our earlier conversation regarding jaywalking,
yeah.
Pedestrian also comes from the auto industry.
Hmm.
Dun, dun, dun.
Will there be a push? Will there be a campaign?
Is there a conspiracy afoot?
Yeah. Will the first lady come on television and talk about pedestrians?
the pedestrian menace? Oh, at least they're moving past jaywalkers. But yeah, we do want to know what you think about auto design, because it appears there's a lot more under the surface of every auto design decision, and the average car buyer is not going to know it.
Mm-hmm. True.
In the meantime, you can find Scott and I on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can check out every episode we've ever done on our website, carstuffshow.com. And you might be thinking, I know exactly what's going on with this weird auto design. Yes, I can tell you why so many minivans have a cartoonish number of cup holders. But how do I get in touch with you guys? Well, the answer is simple, my friends. You can write to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.